Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for tuning into our podcast today. My name is Luis and I'm here with Alina, Zeynep and Desiree.
Hi.
Hi.
All right, today's podcast is going to be all about traveling, so why don't we just get started, Alina?
Sure. Thanks for the introduction, Luis. Too often people get so busy with life that they forget to actually take time for themselves. And the best way to escape the routine and to break free from the monotony of life is probably by traveling to new places and to just experience life from a different and new perspective.
And of course, traveling is an individual experience, and that's why everyone chooses a destination that sparks their own interest.
Yeah, and we chose four different destinations to show that there are a lot of different options to experience a part of the world.
Yeah, that's true. So we choose one destination in Europe, another one in Asia, one location in Africa, and one place in the continent of Australia.
And I chose the Cliffs of Moher in Ireland, which is a cliff formation located at the southwestern edge of the Burren region. And it was formed about 320 million years ago.
Wow, that's quite a long time ago.
That's true. They consist of mainly Namurian shale and sandstone, and it is actually one of Ireland's most visited natural attractions, with over 1 million visitors every year. They're also quite high, as they rise to a maximum of 240 meters above the Atlantic Ocean, and they're nearly 8 kilometers long, with their edge falling abruptly into a ceaselessly churning Atlantic.
So tell me, what exactly can you do at the Cliffs of Moher apart from enjoying the view?
For those who like hiking, there's an official Cliffs of Moher coastal walk, which runs for 18 kilometers from Hex Head to Dolan, passing O'Brien's Tower. And O'Brien's Tower is also one of the many viewing points along the coastal walk.
O'Brien, I think I heard that name before. What's behind the story of O'Brien's Tower?
Well, that's a good question. It was built in 1835 by a local landlord who was called Sir Cornelius O'Brien, and it was intended to be an observation tower for the Victorian tourists. But he also built it because he thought it might benefit the local economy and help release people from poverty.
Wow, I didn't know that tourism was such a big thing at the beginning of the 19th century.
And it actually wasn't, which will probably make O'Brien a pioneer to the tourist industry. Also, another fun fact about the cliffs is that there are many folklore stories surrounding them. For example, Hex Head. I don't know if you've heard of Hex Head, but Hex Head is an unusual rock formation at the most southern point, and it resembles a woman's head looking out into the sea when you view it from the north. And the local Irish legend behind it is that of an old hag, which is a colloquial term for an older, ugly lady or a witch, and she was called Mel. And Mel fell in love with the Irish hero, which I don't know how to pronounce him, but I think it's Cuculain or something, and she chased him all over Ireland. Cuculain, however, did not return her feelings, and he finally ended up at Loophead, which is another rock formation, and he made his escape by hopping across the sea stacks towards the Cliffs of Moher, using them like stepping stones. But Mel, who was not as nimble as she went following after him, but she lost her footing and was dashed to pieces against the cliff, and it is said that the water turned red where she fell, all the way to the cliffs.
Oh, that's such a tragic story. So sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. But also another fun fact for the film fans out there. The Loophead, the rock formation that I mentioned earlier, that's where scenes of Star Wars The Last Jedi were filmed as well. And Harry Potter. I think everybody knows Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. The famous scene where Harry and Dumbledore are looking for Slytherin's locket.
I must say, I didn't know that the cliffs have such a great history and such a significant meaning in the movie industry.
Do you guys like Rolls Royce?
If we like Rolls Royce, yeah. Sure, why are you asking?
Well, because then you might be interested in Hong Kong, as it has the most Rolls Royce per person in the world. Okay, just kidding.
But is the fact about Rolls Royce even true?
Oh yeah, the fact is true though. Anyway, let's talk about Hong Kong. Hong Kong is now a special administrative region of China, but was ruled by Britain for more than 100 years until July 1997. Therefore, you will experience the Chinese culture, but with many Western influences.
Like what?
I mean, it's not just the English language, which is still officially spoken there. When I mention Oxford Road or Queen Victoria Street, you'd most likely assume that I talk about London, right?
Yeah.
Well, actually, Hong Kong has a lot of similar street names as the ones I just mentioned. When people in Hong Kong want to be entertained, they might even head to its Soho district. Yeah, you heard right.
That sounds cool, but what makes Hong Kong so special and different from any other big city?
The interesting point about Hong Kong I tried to establish here is the administrative and cultural mixture of Chinese and British influences. You're not unlikely to have a typical Chinese noodle soup and a so-called Dai Pai Dong in the evening, close to where you have had your British afternoon tea before. There are also many British-style pubs where Hong Kongers enjoy a pint or two after work. Those spots are spread all around Hong Kong, and the tram and subway are great ways to get around. Even though the tourist tram pass is advertised on the lot, you should actually skip on that and save your money for the so-called octopus card. You can charge it and use it not just for commuting, but also in supermarkets and so on. I mean, how great is that? Mm-hmm. Did I grab your interest?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Are you thinking about visiting Hong Kong? Well, you should be, but let me give you some advices and trips before. Although I talked about food and drinks before, which are always a great way to experience foreign countries, you definitely shouldn't spend all your time there eating one noodle soup after another, or maybe try to taste every Chinese beer you can find, which, by the way, guys, is actually not worth it. But you should not miss all the exciting sightseeing Hong Kong has to offer.
But tell me, can you do anything else than looking at the skyscrapers and shopping in Hong Kong?
Great question. Of course you can. To get an astonishing view on the city, the peak should definitely be high on your list, as it is the highest point in Hong Kong. From there, you can even see the famous Big Buddha statue, which you can't miss on when being in Hong Kong. But it's not just temples or landscapes Hong Kong has to offer. There are also various opportunities to go out in the night and party. My recommendation for this is LKF. Lang Kai Wong, if I'm pronouncing that right, probably not, but okay. Well, I can't help myself but getting all excited when I talk about this unique place, you know? But anyways, you guys should absolutely check out Hong Kong. You won't regret it, that's for sure.
Thank you. So, we heard something about two completely different destinations. Like, whether you're interested in nature or one of the biggest cities in the world, you can get a lot out of this. So, Desiree, tell us something about the place you picked.
I want to talk about Lagos. Maybe some of you already heard about it.
I only know the Lagos in Portugal. Do you mean that place?
No, that's actually not the one I'm talking about. Lagos is not only the name of a state in Nigeria, but also a metropolitan area. The Lagos metropolitan area consists of the densely populated and most built up parts of the state. Lagos is not only becoming a mega city in terms of population, but it is also a global city with one of the busiest seaports on the African continent.
Sounds interesting. So why did you choose Lagos?
Because the most interesting phenomena about Lagos is the tremendously fast growth of the population. In two generations, Lagos' population has increased 100 times from under 200,000 people to nearly 20 million people.
Wow, I mean, that's nearly the population of Australia. What's the reason for that incredible increase?
Well, one reason is the high rate of natural growth, since most migrants to the city are young. Another reason is that Nigeria is becoming an increasingly urbanized country. While back in 2015, half the population was still living in rural areas, the majority will be urban within the next few years. But Lagos is also a city of huge diversity. Most residents are living in poverty and very few are vastly wealthy.
Well, so it is rather a poor country, right?
Yes, it is. But that isn't really a surprise, considering that there are way too many people in the city sharing such little space. Lagos is almost 100 square kilometers big, and the population is estimated to be over 70 million people. Berlin, which has comparable size, has only 3 million residents. And by the year of 2100, Lagos is expected to reach a whopping population of 88 million people.
Wow.
By the way, English is still Lagos' national language, even though Nigeria became independent from the British Empire in 1960. I guess the influence is still visible.
I have to admit that I didn't know much about Lagos, but it was nice to learn something about it. Zeynep, which place sparked your interest?
The place I chose differs a bit from the other destinations. I want to talk about the Balim River Valley in Papua New Guinea. But maybe I should start with some fact about Papua New Guinea. The island is the second or third biggest island in the world.
Wow.
It is still hard to measure that due to the fact that the island itself mainly consists of massive forest areas, which makes it hard for the satellites to measure the length. Apart from the jungle, there are only a few villages and 900 different languages are spoken there, which is a lot. The country is divided in two, and one half is a former Dutch colony, which was also annexed by Indonesia, while the other is a former British colony. And the former British colony is independent and the so-called Papua New Guinea that we know. But there are a lot of independence movements in the former Dutch part that fight the Indonesian government. The reason behind that is that the Indonesian government supports mines and massacres a lot of civilians.
Crazy, but why do we never hear something about this in the news?
Yeah, good question. I think the main reason is that the country is just too far away from us and isn't really like connected to Europe at all. Mm-hmm. But there's also a media ban in West Papua, which makes it really difficult for journalists to get this entry permit for that country. And that makes it even harder to bring these informations about the country to Europe.
Yeah, well, that does make sense.
But you also wanted to talk about a special valley, right?
Yes, that's right. The Balim River Valley is a valley about 50 kilometers long. And most of the land surface consists of jungle and a lot of caves, actually. And the valley was discovered by Richard Archbold in 1938 and contains around 50,000 inhabitants.
Wow, 50 kilometers long. That sounds really interesting. But actually, am I able to enter this as a tourist?
Yeah, you are, of course, but it's not that easy. There is one route to get into the valley, and around 12 groups per year follow this route. These groups are accompanied by a team leader who knows the environment and the tribes, which is quite important if you want to get in there.
Mm-hmm. And are there different tribes? Like, what kind of tribes exist there?
Yeah, there are two main tribes, the Dani and the Yali, and hundreds of sub-tribes. And the tribes, they live very traditionally due to the fact that the valley was discovered rather late. And the Dani live in Western New Guinea and is one of the most populous tribes in Papua. They speak four different dialects and their language is quite different to ours. For example, they only differ between two colors. Mili is the term for cool and dark colors, and Mola is the term for warm and light colors. And also to their culture, the sweet potatoes are the main dish and they use the so-called earth oven method to prepare their food.
And how do the Dani differ from the other tribe?
The Yali live in the east of the valley and they speak the language of Ngali Ndunga subfamily. And until 1970, there were reports of cannibalism within the tribe. The members of the tribe are usually very small, around 150 meters. Traditionally, the men are only clothed with a so-called penis theth.
That's a hard word.
It's around the waist, and their hair covered with hairnets. And the women usually only wear skirts of reed. And the society is rather patriarchic, with the men going hunting and feeding the families, while the women have to cook for them and basically have to obey the men.
Of course.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting. By any chance, do you know anything about their religion?
Yes, they used to believe in animism, and a few of them still do. And animism is when you don't believe in God, but in the essence of the spirits everywhere in nature. There are two different types of spirits, those who protect you and the so-called nature ghost that can be like bad to you if you, for example, harm the nature. There are still a lot of totems everywhere in the valley that remind you that you're not allowed to harvest plants there or not to make the ghosts angry. Even though there are still a lot of followers of the animism, especially the Yali tribe, follows the Protestant religion.
Are there ever any fights in the valley between the tribes?
Oh yes, of course. There are a lot of blood fights. If someone gets killed in the fight, their relative attacks the village of the murder, and that usually escalates. The Indonesian government sends then so-called warriors to the Great Wars and pays the combatants with pigs.
Pigs? I mean, I prefer money, but why pigs?
Yeah, because pigs are a status symbol there. They are dealt with and only eaten on special occasions. For example, if you want to marry someone, you usually pay the bride with pigs, or pigs are eaten at a big funeral. It is really precious for them.
Yeah, so I have another question. Would you actually travel there?
I would love to. I think if you go in an accompanied group, it's safe and a great once-in-a-lifetime experience to learn something about a completely different culture.
Yeah, I agree. Like, actually, guys, really, it's so nice that we all picked such different locations, you know, which are all unique in their own way. I think it's great.
Yeah, so true. And I really hope that some of our listeners can get something out of it, and maybe we spark their interest for at least one of the destinations.
I hope so.
Which brings me to the end of today's podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, as always, guys.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. It was really interesting.
I hope so. I hope you guys found it interesting as well, and make sure not to miss on our next episode. And see you around, yeah.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye.